Turn it back over to Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We are going to take things a little bit out of the order that I had originally discussed. We're waiting for Mark Grant to get back to do the Amendment 17 presentation. So we will jump actually to the last item, which is the issue concerning the TMGC. Do you have any presentation on that, Tom?
Well, I can just highlight the document in the binder and refer to it. You have a document in your groundfish binder under the groundfish tab. It's, I believe, document number eight. I'm sorry. And it's an exploration of the Transboundary Management Guidance Committee trading of fish. For those of you who aren't members of the Groundfish Committee, about a year ago, as we were working on preparing for a TMGC meeting with Canada to talk about the sharing of U.S.-Canada resources, an issue came up where we were having problems with reaching agreement with them because of the Georges Bank Yellowtail Flounder Rebuilding Program. And so during the course of those discussions, a suggestion was made that perhaps one way to alleviate that problem would be if we were allowed, if the TMGC was able to trade fish back and forth between the two countries. Right now, under the TMGC agreement, we decide on an overall tack, and the relative shares that go to each country are pretty much determined by a formula that's based almost entirely on resource distribution through the research, through the surveys. And then, so once you have a total tack, you multiply by the resource share, and everybody knows what they get. And so one of the ideas that was floated was, well, what if we were allowed to trade fish back and forth and exchange it within the boundaries of the agreement? So this was mentioned at the TMGC meeting last year as something that the TMGC may want to explore in the future. And so the U.S. TMGC members thought that it would be a good idea to have a discussion at the committee and the council level in advance of the TMGC meeting so that there was some idea of whether the council really wanted to pursue this idea and whether it was something that we should try and get the TMGC understanding altered to allow. The feeling was that, you know, there had been some complaints in the past that the TMGC is a closed process. So if we're going to initiate this trading concept, we felt that it might be useful to have a discussion in advance, see what the council thinks about it, see if they want to pursue the idea. So with the understanding that this is probably going to take a little bit of time within the TMGC process to work out, it's probably not going to be, yes, let's trade, here's a number this year, let's do it. Okay. So we brought this concept to the committee, and the committee, the Groundfish Committee, said, yeah, we'd like to talk about it. We'd like to see some sort of pros and cons written that sort of explore this concept so we have some idea of what it might entail. And so Tom Warren and I worked with the other TMGC members to prepare this document number eight, which the Groundfish Committee has seen already and discussed a little bit. So it gives a little bit of background in the paper, and then it raises some policy and process questions about how we might want to have this trading structured within the TMGC. I don't know if the issues we addressed is, you know, the first one, should trading occur only as part of the annual process, or should we allow in-season trading? In a nutshell, our recommendation was that our, meaning the staff recommendation, and that's combined NIMPS and council staffs, was that trading should only be allowed prior to the fishing year in order to simplify the process. Allowing in-season trading would be a problem, I think, both for Canada, which has basically an ITQ system, and our catch-share system, because if you trade the amount, then suddenly everybody's allocations change in the middle of the year. Then a second question we considered was, should we allow trading to be allowed sort of at the end of the fishing year to balance over-harvest by one country or another? And our initial recommendation anyway was no, because this tends to erode the incentive for each country to keep their catch within their allocation. We have different fishing years between the U.S. and Canada, so that kind of complicates exactly how you would manage to do this balance back and forth. The third question we came up with was, should the Groundfish Committee provide a recommendation to the TMGC regarding a potential trade for a fishing year, or is the TMGC authorized to recommend trades? So this is actually a thorny problem because it's conceivable that different parts of the U.S. fishing industry may want to trade for different things. And so, you know, having a clear process for giving input to the U.S. TMGC members might be quite important for whether or not people would be willing to accept it. I think it's also kind of important for probably for the administrative process so that we know where the input comes in and how the decisions are made about what should be traded. It's a little bit of concern that if you have a public discussion like that, well, then the Canadians know what you're trying to negotiate for in the trade. That's true, but these are secrecy isn't really a big part of these negotiations, to be honest, at least not at present. Should the agreement be modified? Should the understanding be modified so that it incorporates trading? Our general belief is yes. You know, the process should be documented under the understanding. We're not sure. We don't think, Tom and I don't think anyway, that the FMP and regulations would need to be modified. They're pretty broad-based right now and say when a recommendation comes out of the TMGC, the council considers it, forwards it on to NIMS. The regulations and Amendment 13 don't really specify the limits on how the agreement is determined. What's the principal benefit of trading? Trading provides an additional option for the TMGC to consider to increase catch of transboundary stocks. It would enable each country perhaps to have more of fish it needs or wants or more likely harvests. Just an example, there have been times in recent years where the Canadians don't catch all their George's yellowtail and we feel like we don't have enough of it. And we don't catch all of our haddock, and the Canadians don't feel they have enough of it. So, you know, there's at least theoretically a possibility that that might be subject to trade. And both countries might benefit. With the current status of the Eastern Georges Bank cod stock, it's unlikely that you would be seeing any trades of cod soon, anytime soon, because both countries tend to look at that as being something that they don't have enough of. So these were the concepts we brought to the Groundfish Committee. The Groundfish Committee had some discussion. They had some additional questions that they've asked us to try and address. We're just trying to bring this issue to the council's attention. I don't know if the council wants to have any discussion on it now. We have another council meeting in June before the TMGC meets, which is probably early September, Tom. So, you know, there would be time for the council to give more feedback and guidance to the TMGC at the June council meeting. But there may be some utility in if the council has other issues that they think ought to be highlighted that are not in either our committee report that the committee talked about already or that aren't included in this document that Tom prepared for us.
Thank you, Tom. Before the discussion, we do have a committee motion on this, which I will offer up. On behalf of the committee, recommend that the council develop through an action a TMGC quota trading mechanism incorporating council and NIMS staff's policy and process recommendations. It's passed at the committee 5-4-3. Essentially, if this motion got passed by the council today, then this issue would probably get into the priority queues coming up in the fall, and then you would have to figure out whether we wanted to do something on it or not.
Okay, so that's the committee motion. Doesn't require a second. It was a close vote. Turn to the council. Jim?
Yeah, I voted in opposition to this motion at the Groundfish Committee, and I just think the reasons I have is that it's likely in the near future, cod is not going to be, nobody's going to want to trade cod. There's not enough to go around on Canadian side or our side, so cod won't be one. The only likely candidates for trading in the near future are probably, they may want to trade some yellowtail for some haddock, and couple of things rise there that had to end up on our market, so we're trading for something that we're going to compete against. It bothers me a little bit there. Secondly is I think even though haddock is quite plentiful, somebody has a little less than they need in this fleet. I don't know who, but somebody does. And so if we traded 10% of the haddock, just use a number, then that everybody has 10% less. Well, at some point, that means something to somebody. And I don't know how we're going to rationalize that. So I think we have... And, you know, one argument that somebody I asked of one of the proponents of this was the supporters of this was that why would they want to do it? And they said to catch OI. And that really struck me as strange. I think we ought to first let us try to catch OI on our side, which I submit we haven't done a very good job of trying to. So I'd like to see us concentrate our efforts on trying to get OI and not trying to figure out a way to trade. Thank you.
Rip. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with a lot of what Jim has said. I'm also thinking that in terms of looking at this, in terms of future priorities, we've already discussed some things that will be done by the Groundfish Committee, and I just don't see this rising to something of the level that we would work on it in the future in terms of priorities. And it certainly seems to me like it's something that can sit on the sidelines for now, and then we can focus on some of the things that, as Jim says, will help our industry catch OI.
Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I did vote in favor of this. It's not three cheers. It's more, you know, one and a half at the most. And I think Jim Odlin is exactly correct. The only thing about it is that the percentage splits that we negotiate are pretty well locked in, you know, as going down through the years. And fish don't necessarily respond to our numbers. So I think that we should have the mechanism. So at some point, I don't want to see this die, but I don't think it's going to be very soon before it's going to rise above the level of the bar. And I am going to vote for it, but it's ambivalent. I'd like to just see it always be on the radar, but kind of on the 95-mile set and not on the 24-mile set. So I do think that we need to do this. And as far as what Tom was saying about the negotiations with the Canadians, the TMGC is very much different from NAFO or from our relations with the Canadians on the ICAT. TMGC is almost collegial, so I don't think we really need to worry about hiding our intentions from the Canadians on this particular body. So I will vote for it, but certainly not with the intent that it's going to be done anytime soon.
Dr. Pierce.
I voted for it at the committee meeting, in part because it's made clear in the draft document, that this topic of trading is already on the TMGC's agenda for its annual meeting in late August and early September. I would hate to see it put on the agenda, or it's on the agenda. I would hate to see the meeting be held, and then when the Canadians say, well, what have you done on this? We say, well, we didn't do anything. We put it on the back burner. We had other more important things to do. That's not a very good response. It seems that we've committed to it, so let's do it. Indeed, I think it has tremendous implications and potential great benefits. We need to follow through on the council and NIMS staff recommendations, since their recommendations, I believe, are very sound. And the one I'll point you to is the one on page 3, the last one, what is the principal benefit of trading? They lay it out right there. And for that one particular benefit alone, it's worthwhile for us to move this forward and not set it aside. We have too many important discussions with the Canadians. The TMGC is very important. And as it says in that one particular paragraph, the likely conditions that would prompt a trade are when the shared TACs that results from the understanding do not match the anticipated catches for the U.S. and Canada. A trade would probably result in better alignment between the total allocated TAC and actual levels of catch. So great benefit to this, I suspect, and I really feel it needs to be moved forward. So I'll support the motion.
Doug?
Rip, is this a frameworkable item or is it an amendment, required amendment?
I believe it's frameworkable.
Yeah, I think so. It may ultimately depend on exactly what measures you're proposing, but we've preliminary looked at it, and I think it's probably frameworkable.
Mary Beth.
Just a question. If this motion were to pass, would then this be on the list of priorities in November? Is that what this means?
For consideration with everything else.
Okay.
It doesn't guarantee it a slot. It's right. One of the things that will be listed in the, especially with groundfish, in the laundry list of items that we usually have to mull over. All right, Tom, that's your interpretation. If this were to pass, you would bring this up as an option for the council to consider in priorities in November?
Yes. And then I think the other question is, does this mean serve as direction to the TMGC members to try and pursue this issue? You know, the fact that it's been brought up on the table at the TMGC, we haven't committed to anything yet, you know, and so the question would be, if this motion passes, do you want the TMGC to try and come to agreement with the Canadians on this?
I guess either to you, Tom Neese, or to Tom Moore, and I know this issue did come up briefly, I think, in a recent TMGC meeting, but there really wasn't any context to the discussion other than is it something we should talk about? And I think it was decided that you would place it on the next agenda, which is the one upcoming.
Yeah, I'd let Tom answer this, I think.
Tom?
Correct. It was first brought up in the context of brainstorming how we get additional flexibility due to the Magnuson Act rebuilding requirements. And then it was kept under discussion. The TMGC discussed it briefly and just made the decision that it should be a process to be considered after the current understanding results in the shared TAC. And so therefore we said, okay, each country would go back and discuss it among their respective management bodies and industry members and revisit it next year, which will be this September.
Okay. So this paper in front of us has been reviewed by the committee. We have a motion from the committee that was tight. To Dr. Pierce's point, I think if this motion were to pass at the next TMGC meeting, the TMGC members from the council would be in a position to say, look, we're developing a paper with staff, we're reviewing it internally, and then put it on the Canadians to say, you know, where are you in this discussion on your side of the equation, and have a dialogue. You come back to the council in November as you're looking at priorities, you would have the benefit of that discussion at the TMGC in order to rank where this falls in terms of all the other groundfish priorities that may be on the table. So I don't think it's a commitment to do anything. The paper's already written. I think staff's not going to do any more work on it. It really just puts the TMGC in a different position with respect to this issue on the agenda. Dave Gaethel.
A question for somebody. If this motion fails and the TMGC negotiates a trading agreement, then what happens?
Well, the TMGC isn't going to negotiate a trading agreement without direction from the council. So if this motion were to fail, it's still going to be on the agenda, and the U.S. side of the TMGC would be in a position to say, we have a white paper developed, but the council has taken no action on it. And you could say, pending this discussion, we'll have our priority-setting debate in November. But TMGC is not going to go up and, first of all, the agreement doesn't even allow for trading. So the first step is to figure out domestically if it's something we want to do. Then the Canadians need to do that. If the TMGC gets to the point where they recommend it, it bubbles up through that whole process, and then would require a change to the agreement between the two nations. So it's a big undertaking. Paul Howard.
A question for Tom.
Are we sure that we need like an action, like a framework or an amendment? Or, for instance, is the TMGC agreement, is that codified? Or is what's codified, the council receives the TMGC recommendation and then can approve it or disapprove it? So I'm just wondering if we need an action or just guidance to the TMGC.
What's codified is the latter, that the council receives a recommendation, works through the process, and then that gets published. But when we had the discussion at the Groundfish Committee, there was some concern that since this is a very different process than the council process, that it would be better, I think, to have clear-cut, spelled out how we decide what we're negotiating for, where are the points for public input into the process, which is why we were thinking that would need a management action. I don't know if Gene wants to weigh in on that or not.
Right. That basically summarizes my advice, is that particularly because this would be an allocative type decision that goes beyond the more technical aspects that the TMG deals with now, that it should be spelled out fairly clearly exactly how these decisions and recommendations are going to be carried out procedurally between the council and the TMGC and the final product.
Jimmy.
Yeah, I don't want to belabor my position, but I just want to say this, that I think we should get real. I mean, the chance of this going above the line in priorities is slim and none. And we should just be honest with the Canadians that at this particular point, we should tell the TMG we cannot consider this at this time and move on. I mean, this is not going above the line. At least I can't see it. I mean, there's too many other things to do. To just keep spending this time, it'll be spending TMGC time, staff time. It's just, we should be real about what we're trying to do from year to year. Thank you.
Terry.
Yeah, I heard two TMGC committee members speak. In opposition, one ambivalent. I mean, would this motion give the committee any advantage at the upcoming meeting, or is it just merely going to tip our hands? I tend to agree with Jim that if it's not going to rise above the bar, or it doesn't seem likely it's going to rise above the bar with all our other issues, then we might be opening up a discussion that's not appropriate.
Did. Yeah, the discussion has clarified my mind on this. I agree with Jimmy, and I will vote against it.
You ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. One. Opposed? Fifteen. Abstentions. One abstention. Motion fails. 1-15. One abstention. Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would ask Mark. I saw Mark walk in. Mark, did he leave? We'll move on to the sector review meeting. Do you have any comments on that, or we just? Oh, Ann's got to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have any really specific comments on it, but just to call the council's attention to the fact that there are two documents related to this in the binder. I think it's actually three documents now because one of them got split in half, but the staff did prepare a list of projects that are ongoing that are going to analyze sector performance in the first year. Those are under tab 7A, under the ground fish materials, and then 7B is a description of those projects. Just in terms of this, well, this workshop is coming from the priorities list from 2011, and I guess I'll back up a minute. And the idea of the workshop is to analyze sector performance after the first year and to do sort of a lessons learned review. The ground fish committee talked about when to hold this workshop and a little bit about what to include in the workshop. And this list of sector analysis projects was intended to guide the discussion so that the committee and the council knows what reports are coming out that are being done by outside groups, what sort of information will be available about how the sectors have performed, and hopefully the council and the committee can give some guidance as to whether this is the information they want or whether there's more information about sector performance that they'll be looking for. And then we did provide a straw man agenda for this sector lessons learned workshop, which was just an idea just to start discussion about what to talk about during the workshop, and that's under 7C in the binder, with some ideas about who to have present and how to organize that. But we're really just sort of looking for guidance about what the council wants to do with this workshop that was on the priorities list.
I do have a motion that was a committee motion that I think was made two committee meetings ago. Subsequent to that, we have had some additional discussion with the service and tried to estimate the time on which the sector annual plan reviews would be ready. I'll put up the motion, and then obviously I think the discussion will cover the fact that even though we had requested that this be in July initially, it's not likely that we will have the documents ready for that. So we can at that point discuss whether we want to make a change on that or get rid of it altogether. So on behalf of the Groundfish Committee, request that the Executive Committee and or Council schedule a council meeting in July to receive reports directly from the sector managers. Passed at the committee 11-0-1.
Discussion? Jimmy?
Yes, I originally supported this motion, and I'd still like to have it happen, but in discussions with the service, it appears that it's unlikely we're going to have any data that we can really hang our head on. So I'd like to offer a motion to substitute that we postpone consideration of this council meeting until sometime in October. I think that was the timeline we were talking about.
I'm just wondering whether it would just make more sense rather than do that. It's just make an amendment to it that the council schedule a council meeting in the fall to receive.
Yeah, I can accept that wordsmithing.
I'd accept that as a friendly, except we can't do that. It's a committee.
Is there a second? Seconded by Mike Leary. Discussion? Sally, then Dave.
In theory, would support this, but I feel like we need to get this information as soon as possible. And if the information is available sooner, then we should be receiving it sooner, and it should be discussed in a public forum sooner, and as soon as possible. So I would suggest rather than picking a date, that we just have it be as soon as possible, or as soon as something like that. I mean, if it's available in September, let's do it in September.
I believe at the June council meeting, we will have the benefit of a, I don't know, it's a 9 or 10 month review from the service. Pat, is that still on track? Or Frank?
Yes,
is that
it
on
is.
Track?
Yes.
Okay. So we will have the beginning of the discussion, I suspect, in June. But as some have pointed out, you know, the sector managers have, I think, 60 days to file their annual reports. Then there needs to be a buffer beyond that to perhaps prepare for what we're talking about here, council meeting. So you quickly get into August, September before it's feasible to expect people to digest this stuff. So I think that's where we ended up, September, October time frame. And Dave Gaethel?
I think my concerns were similar to Sally's. I hate to put a date certain out here. I'd say as soon as possible or something. I really think we need to have this meeting sooner rather than later, as soon as we have information. I mean, there's things going on in these communities every day, and the longer this gets stretched out, then the longer it is before we can take action based on the reports. And, you know, meanwhile, people continue to have issues.
Dr. Pierce?
I was going to mention the review that is going to be provided by the service. It seems to me that once that review is provided and we take a look at it and comment on it at our June council meeting, that will then give sector managers and others an opportunity to comment on that review in the context of their reports, their sector reports. That might be helpful. A little exchange between those who would have done the analysis and those who presumably would have a clear understanding as to what actually happened within their sectors. I want it as soon as possible, but we may as well recognize that the two-month opportunity they have to get their reports in. So that's after May, that's after June, July, August, just so, you know, late summer, early fall, but something like that, ASAP, forthwith. So if we don't need a specific date, then I would prefer making this late summer, early fall, as opposed to a late fall as the leaves are falling from the trees and the snow is coming down.
Rip.
Thank you. I would just make a suggestion to the maker and the seconder that we take some language from Magnuson and say, schedule a council meeting as soon as practicable to receive reports directly from the sector, and that, I think, solves some of the other questions.
Paul?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Will a round fish committee be developing the input to the report? In other words, if we want a report, we want a, I would think, a standardized report from each sector. So is that work going to be done?
A lot of that work has been done. It's in the binder. And maybe at the point that we see what the nine-month review looks like, it will help us fine-tune some of the questions that we have set up for that.
Terry.
Got a question for Paul, Pat, and Frank. Is it reasonable to suspect that we might be able to have this concurrent with our September council meeting?
Anything further? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Unanimous, 17. Oh, no, wait, we got to vote again. Sorry. That was a motion to amend. Same question, different vote. All those in favor, raise your hand. Unanimous. Rip.
Thank you, Ann. Mark, do you want to do Amendment 17 now? This meeting is also a public hearing to take comment on Amendment 17. Mark, I'm going to ask you or somebody, is this the final meeting on it? Do we have to then, after we get public comment, vote to submit this? Is that where we are, Pat?
The comment period doesn't close yet. Today's the second meeting that you're accepting public comment at a meeting forum, but the actual deadline for comments is 5 p.m. on May 18th. All right, well, I'm Mark Grant. I work for National Marine Fisheries Service. And I'm just going to introduce Amendment 17 because it is open for public comment right now, so this won't be sort of a true question and answer session so much as just a quick summary of what's in the document as an introduction so that people can then comment. So this action is very short, very specific, and it defines NOAA-sponsored state-operated permit banks. And the goal is to facilitate the effective operation of the state permit banks. So the council, the states, NIMS all have an interest in promoting effective implementation of catch shares, but also minimizing any potential adverse socioeconomic impacts that could occur to fishing communities or small-scale businesses that sometimes result from catch shares. And this is consistent with goal number 4 of Amendment 16. So to that end, NOAA's provided federal grants to the states of Maine, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island to establish state permit banks. And the primary purpose of the administrative action is to basically address an existing regulatory constraint that prevents the state permit banks from operating as intended. So the focus is really just the administrative procedures and operations of state permit banks. It doesn't establish the permit banks. It doesn't authorize the permit banks. Actually, the council already approved state permit bank operations to form sectors in Framework 45. excuse me. So the FMP doesn't actually recognize state permit banks specifically in any way right now. The FMP allocates ACE only to sectors, and only sectors can transfer ACE to another sector. So right now, the only way for a state permit bank to provide ACE to a sector would be to join or form its own sector, be allocated ACE through that process, and then it would be able to transfer. And really, because there are administrative requirements already associated with the grant and the memorandum of understanding between NIMS and the state permit banks, they're redundant with a lot of the requirements of submitting an annual sector operations plan. And so the action, and I'm going to give a long definition here, but just for discussion, it defines NOAA-sponsored state-operated permit banks as a partnership between NOAA and one or more states in which federal grant funds are used by the states to establish a bank of federal fishing vessel permits and to obtain federal fishing vessel permits so that the fishing access privileges associated with the permits may be allocated by the states to qualifying commercial fishermen and sectors according to the criteria which NOAA and the state have agreed to, which basically means the grant's been given to the states to buy permits, and the goal is that they can use those permits to lease out days at sea or transfer out ACE to help qualifying vessels and sectors. So the action would authorize state permit banks to be allocated ACE directly and then to transfer ACE to approved groundfish sectors and also to lease days at sea to other permitted vessels, which really, as an owner of a permit, they can already engage in. State permit banks would be required to comply with the terms and conditions of the grant as well as the memorandum of agreement established between NIMS and the permit bank. Further, the amendment actually lays out specific criteria that memorandum of agreement must meet in order for a state permit bank to remain approved and to be allocated ACE by the council. So those memorandums of agreement can be changed in the future if agreed to by the state and NIMS, but unless they continue to meet the specifically listed provisions in this amendment, they can't continue to be NOAA-sponsored state permit bank that's allocated ACE by the council. So that leaves in the opportunity for the council to know that certain requirements are always met for these banks. And as I said earlier, comments must be received no later than 5 p.m. on May 18th. You can mail, fax, or email comments, and the details for how to submit those are on page one of the document. Oral comments were accepted at the last groundfish committee and, again, are being accepted now.
Okay. Any comments or questions? Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. I guess that concludes the... Mark Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There has been some discussion, I think, perhaps in Massachusetts about the concept of revolving loan funds. And I wondered if... I just want to be sure that there doesn't need to be any action taken relative to Amendment 17 to allow that flexibility, if it exists. Or is that something outside of the council's purview and strictly between the service and the agency that holds the grant and the MOU? I don't know who's addressed that question to.
I'm not entirely sure, but I think that it's outside the... I don't think it would require any special regulatory changes, and I think it is outside the council and the agency's purview in a sense.
Anything further? Okay. I guess that's the end of the public hearing. Rip?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We will move on to the subject of accumulation caps. Tom, do you have anything on, again? Yeah.
No, we didn't have anything particularly prepared except the committee motion.
Okay, well, I will put up the committee motion to start the discussion then. On behalf of the Groundfish Committee, recommend the Council postpone further committee discussion of accumulation caps until after the July sector workshop. Pass the committee 8-3-1. I would offer up an immediate amendment to it, just to strike the word July, since what we passed before, but that will need to be seconded.
Is there a second? Terry. Okay, on the motion, discussion. Doug?
Yeah, I'll rip at anybody from the committee. What was the rationale behind this? Is it basically you don't think you can do a thing until anything on this until you get those reports?
Well, yes, there was a lot of discussion that certainly the performance of the sectors and what's happened with the sectors and the number of vessels operating, et cetera, would feed into something on the accumulation cap. So it felt like that should come subsequent to whatever kind of sector workshop that we held. That was the basis of the discussion.
So essentially, if this passes, given that we may not be doing our sector workshop until the fall or as soon as practical, it's just almost going to be now going to become potentially a priority item for the next year, because we'll be pretty much there by that time. And so the rest of this year, the Groundfish Committee would be available for PDT to work on the morning's motion here.
correct?
Well, except for some of the other actions that we have bubbling along in the pot.
David Gaitelin, Dr. Pierce.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think there are a number of questions that need to development, and that the development of those questions lead to the need for the discussion of the accumulation caps in the first place. And I think when the Groundfish Committee last met, for example, we didn't have this paper that Dr. Julia Olson had written, which raises a number of those questions. And I think the committee needs to develop a list of questions around the issue of accumulation caps. And, you know, I think that paper would be a good jumping-off point. And I do see the value of having the committee work further on setting up the discussion so it's ready to go when we can finally get these sector reports and stuff. I don't think we should just sit around and wait till September.
Yeah, I oppose this motion at the committee meeting. I think this is a high priority issue for the council. It has been talked about, discussed by this council quite a bit. It has tremendous implications for catch share management here in New England, specific to groundfish sector management. I agree with David that there needs to be continued work, ongoing work, in preparation for the sector workshop. We actually may be able to frame better questions for the sector workshop if we are, at the wheel, busy discussing the pros and cons of accumulation limits. We should not send the wrong signal to the fishing industry, to sectors in particular, that this is something we can put on the back burner. We'll just wait. Not at all. There's been too much, too many comments in the press, letters, emails about what's happening with sectors right now, accumulation, excessive shares, and all of that. So I definitely do not want to wait until sometime late in the fall or early winter to begin discussion, or renew discussion on accumulation caps. This National Marine Fisheries Service has indicated in the Federal Register announcement regarding implementation of Amendment 16 that they're pledging, they have pledged to work with us on this very important issue. They recognize the importance. So if we postpone this, I consider it to be a dropping of the ball, minimizing of our concerns regarding accumulation caps. I think the future of the groundfish fishery will depend quite a bit on what we do with this issue, and I feel very uncomfortable waiting until sometime later on this year, if then, to pick up this topic.
Anyone else on the council? Terry?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't view this as dropping, this motion as dropping the ball. This work is important, and it's going to be a huge job for the Groundfish Committee to work its way through. The committee and the PDT have a number of other issues that are going to be taking place during the summer, including the sector workshop, continued work on the catch share workshop, the specs, much less the issue we just voted upon this morning. I think that we'll be able to give the entire discussion better attention and full justice by delaying until after we have the sector workshop information in hand.
Dr. Weinberg?
Yeah, just for the council's information, the Mid-Atlantic Council, which manages the surf clam and ocean quahog fishery, they're having this fall, winter, and spring, they've developed a definition of what an excessive share is in their ITQ fishery, and they're having an independent review of that report this June. So there should be some information, a final report available on that in July. So that would be something relevant to this topic, at least.
Anyone else on the council? Pat?
I'm opposed to the motion, not the motion to amend, obviously, but the main motion. For all the reasons that I've stated at the last several council meetings when we've had this discussion, I think that there's this is a very complex issue, and it's going to be a very difficult issue for the council, and I really think it would benefit from starting the conversation now. I don't think it depends on the information coming out of the first year. I think it goes back to the issue of the council and the industry and all of us involved having some sort of vision for where we want things to be and how we think this fishery should operate. And I really think that that we need to get on with that and you know, stop pushing it down the road.
Jim.
Yes, I'm in favor of this motion. I think that on the committee we have kind of run up against, it's not that this hasn't been debated, we've run up against, we have the tools that some people think we need to do this, and in some cases we don't. So we need further time to develop that in with the information we're going to be getting in the upcoming reports. And as far as I'm concerned, the best way to protect communities and prevent massive accumulation is to catch more fish. Pounds over the dock. And by spinning our wheels on this, which is going to be a long, long process, we're taking time and energy when we could be trying to figure out ways to catch OI. If we start catching more fish, this becomes smaller and smaller of an issue, and that can have an effect, an immediate effect, or a more rapid effect than something like this would have to preserving the infrastructure, expanding the community, and expanding fisheries. And we're leaving a lot on the table. And every time we take on this stuff, we just keep leaving more on the table. So I think for those reasons, I'm in favor of the motion.
I'll go to the audience. On either the motion to amend or the main motion, I'd like comments. Steve? Either one.
Steve Welch, commercial fisherman from the South Shore of Massachusetts. This to the small boat fleets and the small ports is a huge issue. I mean, we're very concerned about losing what we have left now. And we would feel a little more comfortable if we could start these discussions immediately instead of postponing. From what I understand, it'll be next year. So I guess I'm against the motion, and we should somehow work towards discussing this problem. And we can freeze things where they are right now and just have that as of the accumulation and then develop a program where people want to lease more in, they can lease more in. But I'm concerned about big money coming in and buying up, because there's a lot of people that want to get out of the industry right now, and it's not right. We still have a lot of things to smooth out with sectors. This would be a start. Thanks.
Brett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Brett Tolley, the Northwest Atlantic Marine Alliance, NAMA. I'm also from a fishing family out of Massachusetts. My family are active ground fishermen. I just quickly want to read a brief letter that was written to the council on behalf of a fisherman out of Portland, Maine. I'll keep it brief. It's just a piece of his letter. He wanted to be here today to comment. This is a really important issue to him. So this will just take a second. My name is Brian Pierce. I fish out of Portland, Maine, and I've been a full-time commercial fisherman out of New England, fishing on the New England multi-species groundfish for over 20 years. I'm writing today to ask that you take immediate action to support the goal of fleet diversity and put an end to consolidation of quota in the New England ground fishery. So I just wanted to read that, and just on behalf of NAMA, we oppose this motion. And I just want to make, you know, one comment in terms of the accumulation caps. There's talk of postponing this discussion to wait for the sector workshop. But I just wanted to point out that there are things that we know already. The staff had put together a report back in January that showed that three entities just in Massachusetts already own over 40% of the quota of just one stock. Now, to me, that's already excessive consolidation. And the council has, as a goal and objective of Amendment 16, the goal to prevent excessive consolidation. There's been motions passed by the council to repeat that intent, that goal. There's national standards that reflect that goal. And right now, I mean, if you agree that over 40% for three entities is excessive consolidation, there's no strategy right now to ensure that that goal will be achieved. Now, I think this, you know, goes beyond any, you know, management amendment 16 or whatever. Regardless of the management, there needs to be a discussion about how the goals and objectives will be achieved. And I think this is a really important one to continue. It's been going on for a long time. It's a difficult one, and I recognize that. But I think there needs to be an ongoing discussion for how those goals and objectives will be met. Thank you.
Jim Kendall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim Kendall, New Bedford Siegel Consulting. The motion kind of reminds me of the attitude that a lot of parents take when it comes time to discuss sex and contraception with their kids. And the next thing you know, you're down the road, 18, 19, 20, and you know you're getting close to that discussion, but the next thing you hear is, well, Mom, Dad, I'm pregnant. Well, I got to tell you, this fishery is pregnant. You don't have time to wait to have those discussions. You really don't. We're far beyond that. Matter of fact, the kid is already walking and running. And you're still waiting to have that discussion. At some point, you're going to have to put your back against the wall where the spine is kind of soft and missing and have a tough discussion. How do you avoid this to a point where, like you've already heard, what the accumulation of wealth already is in the hands of a few? The fishermen that are remaining want to stay. I mean, it's obvious. They wouldn't have stuck it out this long. And yet we keep waiting to figure out what their future is going to be like because it's going to be a tough discussion. I really think you guys got to man up. Thank you.
Yeah, Mike.
My name is Mike Pratt. I'm a commercial fisherman from Green Harbor, Mass. Getting into the consolidation thing, I think we got to talk a little bit about the fleet diversity and how that's affecting it, or the lack of fleet diversity under the new system. Most importantly to me is the way the Gulf of Maine cod stock was allocated. By designating a species for harvest in the Gulf of Maine, essentially is saying you can target these fish anywhere you choose from Cape Cod to Canada. The major problem occurring now is that small inshore spots that are easily accessible are bearing most of the fishing pressure. One example is a large increase of effort on Stellwagen Bank, which is due to larger offshore vessels leasing or trading out cod that would have normally been harvested offshore to smaller boats that may have never even landed a Gulf of Maine cod in the past. What is taking place now is we have 85% of the Gulf of Maine cod stock being harvested on 1% of the Gulf of Maine. I believe without some more regulation to provide better and more diversified fleet, we will continue to overfish a small important population of cod originally allocated and intended for harvest by the historical fleet. I urge the council to explore all options to help better diversify the groundfish fleet. Some suggestions I have are possibly dividing the Gulf of Maine into sections, similar to what was done with Georges Bank. Another idea would be to limiting the way fish could be leased by only allowing the lease to qualify if the boat receiving the quota has had history on that particular stock. I would like to thank the council for allowing me the time to voice my concerns.
Mike, anyone else? Back to the council. Mr. Libby.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I voted for this at the committee meeting.
one thing that hasn't been mentioned. This seems to point to the fact that consolidation may have started under sectors, which isn't really true. Consolidation started some time ago. So I'm probably not going to vote for this now because it might be good to start a discussion on how consolidation did in fact start under Days at Sea when we started the Days at Sea leasing program. That's basically when this consolidation thing was kicked off. Thank you.
Anyone else on the council? Sally?
Thank you. So I agree with what Glenn just said about the need to consider how consolidation has progressed over the past many years, not necessarily just over the past many months, and that it's a complicated issue. That's why it keeps coming up, and that's why we keep kicking it down the road, because it is complicated to some degree. But the simple thing is, and it was presented in a staff paper, I think almost a year ago is when it was first presented, and at the back of that paper there was a chart that showed a number of quota-managed fisheries and major features of those fisheries, one of which was, do accumulation limits exist and do they not? And all of them had accumulation limits with one exception, and that was the surf clam ocean coag fishery. So that was where I think the council first started to really think, well, this is something that we need to address sooner rather than later. As far as what we're going to do at this point, the Groundfish Committee decided to defer until after we get a first year, a look at the first year of sector operations to see what should be done. But Glenn just reminded me that, you know, we don't just need to look at year one. We need to look at over the past many years, the trends, the way they're going, and as Pat pointed out earlier in this discussion today, what the desired shape of the fishery is. Now, certainly there's been discussion that lots of different people have different ideas about what the shape of the fishery should be. So I don't expect that the council is going to be able to come up with numbers of how many small, medium, and large vessels of various gear types operating out of X, Y, and Z ports. That's not what we're talking about here. But what we are talking about is just putting plain and simple accumulation caps on the various groundfish species that are managed under this plan. I'm going to vote against this motion. I'm going to vote against the underlying motion. I think we need to keep discussing it. It's hard. We're not quite there yet. But we don't need to postpone this discussion until after we get the sector report sometime in the summer or the fall. We need to be having this discussion now.
Anyone who hasn't expressed their opinion yet on the issue? Ready for the question? On the motion to amend? All those in favor, raise your hand. Nine. Opposed? Five. Abstentions? Motion to amend carries 9-5. Okay. The motion to amend just changes the timing of when the meeting's postponed to. I'm going to call the vote again because we didn't get everyone voting. This is on the motion to amend. All those in favor, raise your hand. Thirteen. Opposed. Three. Abstentions. Motion to amend carries 13-3. Now we're on the main motion as amended. Anything further? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. I count eight. Opposed? Nine. Motion fails 8-9. Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We are now on to the Southern New England cod issue. Tom, did you have any comments on that? Or? Okay. I believe that we did.
Mr. Stockwell?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And related to the past motion there, I mean, this discussion sort of underscores the difficulty the Groundfish Committee has had, and actually the Council's had, in struggling with this issue for the last year plus. So I'm going to offer a motion that for consideration that might focus the committee and the PDT's upcoming discussion and workload as we look at accumulation limits. And my motion is that the Council directs the Groundfish Committee to develop a cap on the maximum number of permits an individual, an entity, or a permit bank can own or control, and that this be the sole purpose of the amendment of the action.
Just for clarification before I ask for a second, for what action? For which action are you referring to in the motion?
The action for the development. For
Amendment
the
17?
18.
It's 18, right? 18. Okay, is there a second? Mary Beth Tooley. Paul Howard?
That was my question. The Council voted in November to initiate an amendment to consider fleet diversity and accumulation limits. So this takes out of that amendment the fleet diversity. Is that correct?
Dr. Pierce.
I appreciate where Terry is coming from. However, I think it's far too limiting. I prefer to focus on share of quota as opposed to consolidation of permits. That's where the issue really lies, consolidation of fish, amounts of fish in the hands of a few as opposed to permits. This is a far more complicated consolidation issues, excessive share issues, go far beyond the intent of this motion, which is to focus just on permits. So for that reason, I will vote against the motion. We must be far, far much, we have to cast a wider net.
David?
I agree with Dave Pierce. This is too constraining. This may not even ultimately address the issue. There are a huge number of issues swirling around this, and I don't want to get into listing them all here today, but, you know, I think that's more committee work. But just limiting it to permits or vessels or any way of limiting the discussion may not get at the underlying issues, and a lot of those issues are you know, things like unequal access to capital and whatnot, and that those will never be touched under this motion. So I think Terry means well, but I can't support it.
Before we get into a big back and forth on this, I want to go back to something Terry Stockwell said about how the past vote, where the delay failed, 8-9, underscores the difficulty this body is going to have and the general public in general has with this issue as it grapples. Just my belief is the council, and I'm done after June. I'm not on the council anymore. But my recommendation to you guys is that in order to tackle this issue, and I think you need to have a long and deliberate conversation about it, you may decide that there's no problem. But until the discussion's had and you reach a determination through deliberation, this will continue to haunt this body and the work of this body and the amendment and the whole management program. So it's my belief that the way to tackle it isn't through this process or a committee PDT process, although they're certainly going to be involved. I actually think you're going to need to use a different process, which may be a facilitated process or some other forum to have these discussions. Because parliamentary procedure and all of the formality of this discussion of this process doesn't necessarily lend itself to having a real deep discussion about this issue. This issue isn't about statistics on a piece of paper, although it certainly can be argued from that position. This issue, for some, has a lot to do with the identity of their community, where they come from, or their vision. They have a vision. We all have our own vision of how things need to go. Ultimately, this body will make that decision. But we do need to have that discussion. We do need to have that deliberation. And whether we wait until we get some information to have that discussion or we begin to have that discussion forthwith, I don't think this forum is going to lend itself well to that discussion. Mary Beth.
Well, I'm inclined to agree with those comments, and I think maybe some people don't really understand the value of the motion. I mean, this is something that's very specific, can move along fairly quickly, and then allow that discussion that you described to happen. People have already described, you know, things are happening right now. They're concerned about what's happening today. Well, it's going to be a long discussion. It's not going to be a simple discussion, and it's going to be complicated. So if people have concerns about what's going on today, then you would vote for this motion and then figure out how to best have the conversation that John describes.
Yeah, thank you for that. Just let me be clear. My comments have nothing really to do with the motion. It's just the ongoing issue. And I think the decentralization of decision-making is a good or healthy thing for New England fisheries. I mean, ultimately, the buck stops here at this table and with the service, but the more power we can give to individual communities that are willing to work together or work as a community to represent their needs, I think in the long term, the better off each community will be. And I have some hope for these teams that are coming into the region over the next few weeks, and hopefully individual communities, large or small, will have an opportunity to fully understand, you know, how they fit into the bigger picture, but also be provided with an opportunity to present their case in a way that perhaps advantages them or that they can use in this forum here and outside of this forum. And we are limited in what we can do and what issues we can tackle at this table. And this one is a difficult one. Terry.
You're exactly right, Mr. Chairman. This is an extremely difficult one. And Mary Beth laid out in part my rationale. This is a first step that can be done in a bite-sized piece under the template of a similar fashion as we have scallop cap. David are correct. This doesn't address all the issues, but it's a sole purpose amendment to start the ball rolling. I think that this discussion is going to be probably as long a discussion as the habitat amendment has been, and I'd like to get something, you know, going sooner than later.
Mark Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think your advice on the situation is wise, and because of that, I agree with Dave Pierce that this doesn't cast a wide enough net for these complicated discussions we're going to have. While I understand Terry is trying to get something moving quickly, this presumes that a cap is an appropriate element of that wider net a priori, and I don't think that we know that yet, so I will oppose the motion. Thank you.
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, this amendment to address this specific issue is not a small bite. I suspect it would take us well over a year to develop it. It would distract us from the other issues regarding consolidation and excessive shares. I would also remind the council that as we were moving forward to finish Amendment 16 and to get it implemented in time for May 1, 2010, we had already decided that it was important to cap shares of sectors, no more than 20% of each ground fish stock. We were going in that direction. We had given that a great deal of thought. It was a concept that this council had embraced, made sense, needed some refinement, needed some further work. We took it out of Amendment 16 for a number of reasons, the primary reason being that sectors had already established their membership roles, and it would be inappropriate to suddenly tell a sector, sorry, you're going to tell her and him you're out. That would have been chaotic. That was the logic that was used when that 20% cap strategy was adopted. So we've already been there. We've already done that. We've already expressed great concerns about excessive shares, but it was removed. So now we're back into the discussion of excessive shares, and I want to pick up discussion on that particular topic, ASAP, not to wait on that, especially as it relates to individual sectors. I also want to discuss as soon as possible some of the ideas that we know are out there, such as the one, the British Columbia Groundfish Individual Vessel Quota Program. All sorts of great ideas as to what they've already done to deal with their specific concerns about consolidation. There are a lot of other ideas out there that have already been aired that we need to visit ASAP and not be distracted by a focus on this one issue amendment that I think will, I feel, will not get us where we need to go.
Jimmy.
Yeah, I support the motion. We're acting like the Groundfish Committee hasn't discussed this. I mean, the Groundfish Committee has looked at a cap. Dr. Pierce is talking about we want to have percentage shares on individual stocks on individual boat vessels. We don't have the mechanisms to do that. If we do that, and we are an ITQ, because we have to let people get rid of what they don't have and what they do have by species, and I don't see the mechanism to do that right now. All they have is an ace in aggregate. So to go down that road is going to take a long time, probably going to put you into the ITQ category, and 5 years from now we'll have it. Maybe, if it passes. And the other thing people are missing, I mean, $25 million has been put into this industry in permit banks. $25 million. Well, it will be shortly. That's a lot of money in a $60 million business, and $25 million that doesn't have to get paid back. So if anything is going to preserve fleet diversity, that will be the issue. We have 19 sectors in place, and they all have one form or another of first rights of refusal. The chance of some big player coming in here and buying up all the best permits and the whole fleet is, you know, I said it earlier, slim and none, and slim left town. I think if you want to get something done, that this is a direction to take, could probably be accomplished in a reasonable amount of time. And again, there is plenty of checks on diversity in that are out there right now. So, thank you.
Pat.
I'm opposed to the motion. I think I appreciate trying to move the issue forward. But I think that having this as the direction of the committee will prevent the discussions that need to happen about is there a problem? If there is a problem, what do we need to do about it? And what do we want? How do we want things to look? And what are we trying to achieve? I think that all of that will be overshadowed by just trying to comply with the direction in this motion.
Doug?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Terry, for putting this motion up to try and focus us and get us moving forward. But after consideration here, I think I'm going to oppose this because I do think we need to have a cast a net as far as possible in these discussions, and I'd be glad to help out, if anybody, with those discussions, too. Thank you.
Anyone else on the council? Mark.
I'm opposed to this, but only because I think it's too limiting. But I just wonder if we're missing an opportunity to really air this out. I mean, a round of scoping could really get this out in the open, get a lot of inputs on the issues and ideas from people, and it may be a big opportunity to get it rolling.
Anyone else on the council? Go to the audience. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm Dick Graycheck, Point Judith, vessel owner. I listened yesterday. I've been here for 3 days. I know it's hard work for you guys. I understand that. It's harder to sit here and listen. I got news for you. Everything I heard was antithetical, no, hostile to fishing. Almost every single thing I heard, almost every decision. I went home last night and I had a 4-page letter from my bank. And it wasn't congratulations, you've paid off your mortgage. It wasn't that. So this is a real issue. It's immediate. And yes, consolidation has been happening for a while because NOAA has been screwing us up for years and people have dropped out. And if you think catching more fish is the answer to this, Jim, you're not speaking for anybody but yourself. We made one trip to Georgia. Let me give you just a field report, okay? I know you all have a vision for the fishery. But let me tell you where your vision is going for most of the boats. We made our first trip to Georgia's. Usually we get half of our income from groundfish. I was awarded 2,400 pounds of yellowtail for the year. I got 30,000 pounds of haddock. So we said, okay, we'll make a trip. We'll gamble the $9,000 worth of fuel to get out there and fish for a couple of days and get back. He got out there, the haddock weren't around. The guy, a couple of days before, had 47,000 pounds. He went out, there was no haddock. They were up in the column or something. We couldn't catch them. He couldn't catch them. He loaded up on yellowtail. They were all over the place, couldn't get away from yellowtail. As skinny and as anemic as they are, that's all that's out there for that day. They went through two gales. Four men worked day and night for 6 days. He came back with 16,000 pounds of yellowtail. I had to buy, I had to buy 14,000 pounds of yellowtail, 50 cents a pound. We got 82 cents at the dock for them. Getting the math? It was a broker. We had $8,000 worth of fuel. We got about $20,000. I had to pay $7,000 for the fish. It was a broker. Four men worked 6 days, almost day and night, through two gales, and it was a broker. I lost $2,000. They broke $2,000 worth of hydraulics. I lost $2,000 on the trip. So you can dither around with all the procedural stuff you want, but there's people going out of business every day, and there's families going. I got five families dependent on my boat making money with about 10 kids. That's including me and my wife. So four other families with 10 kids. That's what's happening with your vision, Pat, for the fishery. This is what's happening. And it's happening to a lot of boats besides me. I can only speak for myself. But go around to the docks if you want to have a vision and see what's really going on out here. So this is a really hot issue. And I know that I want one more thing. I want everybody here who gets a paycheck or everybody who has a fleet and is profitable. I want you to think about one thing. Just reverse roles with me. We lost half of our income because of these catch shares. Half. So think about this. Cut your paycheck in half for the next year and come and talk to me and see how you feel about somebody stealing this from you. Vision or no vision, this was a boondoggle, and you're killing an industry with this. Point Judith, three of my very close friends, Highliner, great fishermen, just sold their boats and their permits to one buyer in Point Judith. That's consolidation. And they have to, and the crew has to work and sell their fish to this buyer. That's consolidation. So this is what's happening, and this is not theoretical. This is not a PowerPoint presentation. This is real. It's happening today, and it's happening to me. Thank you for your time, and please, don't go home without talking about this at least. Man up, like Jim says. Stand up. You know, we had Bomer was here yesterday telling you that we're going to have windmills, okay? This is Minerals Management Service of Gulf of Mexico fame. are telling us that on areas that we haven't even been able to steam through, they're considering leasing for windmills. Right after that, the next speaker came up and was talking about the destructive, the program he's got to measure the destructive, the destruction that, that fishing gear does. Now, come on. I mean, how absurd can you get? I had the monkfish guy came in and he put up on the screen 7-4 and 28 against us, something like that, I think it was. And everybody said, oh, well, therefore we should move ahead with it then. 28 against and 7-4 cat shares and monkfish, and it's a go? That's strange math, people. You've got to do your job. You've got to do some service for the fisheries. You've got to start to work to keep this these fisheries going. This is a great source of food, and we're losing it. I had to have a salad at Friendly's. There was stuff in that salad that were unidentifiable. It was like packing material or something. I don't know what it was. That's the kind of garbage that's out there. This is a good source of food. Omega-3, low fat. Come on. Step up. We got a good industry here. We got putting a lot of people to work or out of work right now. And there's plenty of fish out there. Don't believe for a minute that we've got a huge overfishing problem. Your own scientists said that we don't have overfishing. We need your help. We need you to stand up and not just lay down and have somebody come in and say, this is a done deal, and you just might as well deal with it. Thank you. I've had enough.
Ed?
Ed Barrett, commercial fisherman. I'm against this this motion for many of the reasons the other speakers have talked about. But my concern is we didn't do a very good job of the allocation process on the sectors. And we were promised to have a discussion and to revisit it in the future. And here we are. Well, we're, Amendment 17 is now just going to be about permit banks, and this thing is just going to be about, you know, a limited number of allocation controls. When the real problem is the allocation. The original allocation is what is the problem. I'm the president of Sector 10, and I have a lot of members that are extremely angry over the fact that certain sectors have been able to accumulate quota in excess of what we have in the Gulf of Maine for Gulf of Maine cod. So I think what we need to do here is have the discussion, not be putting Band-Aid upon Band-Aid upon Band-Aid, which is what we're doing here. So please have the let's have an amendment about the allocation. Let's do it right for a change, instead of putting Band-Aids on something that's broken. Thank you.
Jim?
Jim Kendall, New Bedford Seafood Consulting. I tried to interject a little while ago, Mr. Chairman, because I wasn't sure if I was the only one, but apparently I'm not. Could you please describe or explain the result of the previous, not so much the result, but the consequences from the resulting votes that were taken on the previous motions? The motion to amend, and which passed, and then it failed. So what consequences, or what are the results because of that vote?
The council decided not to delay work on Amendment 18, to not delay it.
Not to delay on Amendment 18?
Yeah. Amendment 18 was the one about fleet diversity and accumulation caps. We had a motion from the committee that said delayed until we have a sector workshop.
Right.
That said in July in the original motion from the committee. then that motion was amended to say after the sector workshop and didn't say July in it. It struck July out because we already decided it's not happening in July.
Right. So basically that wiped the slate clean. And that's where my confusion and I think other confusions may be resulting because no one is quite sure what the message is from that point on. If I was a boat owner or a fleet owner and I was accumulating more permits and more quota, I would feel that they decided to wash it clean. And whether he's right or wrong, he's going to be able to have that argument. The other hand, the person who believes it passed and expects something from it, anyways, what I'm getting at is I think there should have been a clearer explanation or a clear explanation given, let alone a clearer one, because I spoke with Tom Darcy, and it's kind of hard to hit them with a question like that while they're trying to pay attention to the next motion. And this next motion carries it a little bit further. But, you know, to get back to what Dick Graycheck was saying about Ballmer and Minerals Management, first, thank you for the explanation. I think I understand it. To get back to Dick's statements about Ballmer and Minerals Management, one of the niceties about it is the new title for Ballmer. The last two words are enforcement and regulation. So now they've built that into Minerals Management. Another thing that's a good part for the fishing industry. But an amendment, even an amendment, if it could remain solely one purpose, would probably take at least a year to get passed before this would be handled. Is there a control date that is either established, but I don't see it linked to this? When would it be linked?
The council requested that the service put out a control date, publish a control date. I think it was at the November council meeting.
Right.
And the service subsequently did publish that control date. I don't recall what the date is. It's something.
All right, and I don't really expect you to, but my concern is it doesn't seem linked to this pending motion, or this pending motion for the pending amendment. And I think it should be explicit in here that control date would link to this if this does go through. Because once again, the arguments are being built up. You have people sitting on the council who are voting on some of their own issues that should have been recused a long time ago. I'm not accusing anyone. I'm stating a simple fact that over the years, there's been a lot of concern about conflict among council members and their own personal issues. And this just keeps pushing it further and further down the road. And none of us are satisfied with the resulting determinations that come of it. So I think at some point, like I said earlier, you're going to have to man up on some of these issues and take some of the hard things first and let the industry know that you guys are going through the same problems they are. There's an awful lot of people that are being forced into positions they don't want to be in. I don't see why the council should be excluded from that particular role either.
Let me just be clear, Jim, on two points. One, there is a control date in this fishery that was published, I forget the date, April?
April 7th.
So that's on the books, and you know how control dates work. But as of anything that happens in terms of permit transfers or accumulation of new permits from that date forward, the council has notified the public we may treat those transactions differently than anything prior to that.
And I'm well aware of that. I was here for the vote. I spoke in favor of the vote as well. But the problem with that, Mr. Chairman, and you've been around long enough here to see that this has occurred before, is the fact that when the amendment does come of age, someone will look back and they'll say, but that's an old, stale control date, and the argument begins anew. In the meantime, things continue down the road that the industry, for the most part, does not want them to go down. Right. That's where the biggest problem is here. It's basically a stalling tactic to put us in a position where we're too weak to argue.
Right, no, I agree with you on control dates. The older they are, the harder they are to stick to. The second point I wanted to make was just to be clear on your first question of clarification. The committee came to the council and said, we want to delay the accumulation to fleet diversity amendment. And the council voted no. You're not going to delay it.
All right. And I think, like I say, I think that was the problem was that you remained silent at that point. And that's why I'm saying even now with the control date should be linked to this motion or a following motion that explains that it is still pertinent to this upcoming amendment.
Brett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Brett Tolley, NEMA. I'll try to keep my comments brief and to the motion. We oppose the motion, and I just wanted to remind council members that back in June there were goals and objectives set for this Amendment 18 that included maintaining inshore and offshore fleets, maintaining fleet diversity, balance of geographical distribution of landings, and excessive consolidation. I don't think that restricting the amendment to the amount of permits one can own really gets to any of those goals and objectives. I want to, you know, just add the comment that moving forward, I think it's important that the council look at all of the tools that other fisheries have used. I think David Pierce had brought up a really important tool that has been used in British Columbia, and I think the council staff has already laid out a report outlining some of the other tools that fisheries have used. And I think moving forward, those tools need to be laid out and made clear so that, you know, the, you know, folks, you know, fishermen in the industry can take a look at it and understand, you know, what are the tools that have worked, how have they worked, and how can they apply to the fishery. I think, you know, that's an important direction to go. David Gaethel had mentioned a new paper by Julia Olson. I think there's a lot of direction that can be given to the council staff to move this forward. I don't think this motion does it, and I encourage council to give the feedback that the council staff needs to, you know, to move this forward. Thank you.
Okay. Come back to the council. Jim?
Yeah, I have to make kind of a statement here. As far as brokers in fishing, meaning, you know, bad trips, that's been going on for probably 100 years. You know, it's been going on 45 years that I know of. Every spring, people have brokers. Doesn't change. Because the fish show up, they glut the market, you have a broker. In fact, 2 years ago, I'm not sure if it was in this meeting or in this room or in another council meeting, several New Bedford boat owners came to us, boat captains, saying, you got to do something. We flooded the market of yellowtails and they're 10 cents a pound. I had three brokers in a row, right? So now we're getting 70, 80 cents a pound, four times 10 net after they rent. So, I mean, just, you know, it's fishing. We have brokers. It happens.
Anyone else? Sally?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At this late hour, I'm going to offer a motion to substitute. Karen, you should have it. I would move to that the council will establish an ad hoc groundfish accumulation limit committee made up of industry, council members, and AP members. This committee, chaired by an outside facilitator, and we don't have to keep Press Pate's name in there, but that's what I mean by that, just so people know, would discuss accumulation limits, define goals for limits, and submit a suite of options to the council for consideration.
Motion to substitute. Is there a second? Seconded by David Gaethel. Discussion on the motion to substitute. Sally?
If I could just offer some justification here or rationale, Mr. Chairman. So this group can convene even before the sector review is complete. It's something that could happen in the coming months. This kind of group would likely be able to take the discussion on accumulation limits further and in a different direction than the formal council process and the groundfish committee has been able to. And the suite of recommendations could be available for then further consideration in the context of the sector review once that's complete. The current process that we've been following isn't working. We keep going round and round in circles. We need to broaden the circles and obviously welcome to any amendments or modifications to this motion. Just trying to get us unstuck. Thanks.
On the motion to substitute, anything further? David Gaethel.
Just a question. I second it for discussion. Can we can we do this? I mean, somebody's got to pay for this. So, I have to ask somebody, is it doable?
Well, Paul points out we don't know what our budget is yet because we're under a CR.
Okay. And if we vote it up and for budgetary reasons we can't do it, I guess we just come back to the council at that point and say, okay, we can't do it because of the money. What do you want to do next? Would that be accurate?
I think that's fine, Dave. Yeah. Anything further? Dr. Pierce?
I can't recall if we ever gone this route before, actually have an outside facilitator come to help us do our business. Bringing in a facilitator obviously has some complications. The facilitator really has to understand all the issues. Otherwise, the job of facilitation becomes extremely difficult. Plus, it's a bit uncertain here when you say made up of industry and AP members. Again, who's going to be on this committee? Who's going to staff this committee? I understand the rationale for it, but I'm still not sure it's doable or very well advised.
Tom Neese?
I don't know if this will be viewed as an endorsement of this process or not, but we did do this at the start of Amendment 16 in a way. We got the Recreational Advisory Panel, the Groundfish Advisory Panel, and the Groundfish Committee all in a room at one time. Got three facilitators in the room, outside facilitators in the room, and they provided and developed a report, suggestions on what we should be looking for in the Amendment 16 scoping process. So it's not exactly the same situation. They didn't bring forward a suite of measures, but they brought forward suggestions to the council on how to structure scoping on Amendment 16.
Terry.
Yeah, question for Sally. Is it your intention that it's all the council and all the AP or just selected members? And if so, who's going to select them as well as who's going to select the industry members and a timeline?
Well, the timeline would be soon before the sector review would happen, so in a matter of months. And as far as membership, I didn't think that it would be every single council member. I was just trying to be inclusive. And who would determine that? If we get the right outside party, I think they would be able to determine it more effectively than the council would be able to or the executive committee would be able to. But it wouldn't necessarily be everybody. I was just kind of calling out three logical groups that should be included.
I'm feeling even less comfortable now. I think the timeline is not realistic, and I don't like the idea of having somebody else cherry-pick the members that are going to participate in this, because we'll come back to this council here, and it's going to blow up in our face again.
If you feel that way, I would suggest, make a change. We've got to do something here. I mean, this was just a starting point. If that seems too soon, then, we do it as soon as practicable. If we need to have some kind of nominating process to make sure that there's the right mix, rather than having one person do it, then we do that. But I would hate to see us walk away from this table today and with nothing on this topic.
I don't feel that we have nothing on this topic. I'm assuming that the motion I made is going to get voted down and the issue is going to be remanded back to the Groundfish Committee as what I'm hearing with a very high priority. In a period of time, Paul's going to be to advise us what we have for budget. And we'll move on.
I think, to be clear, we have a budget for Amendment 18, and we have a staff for that, and it was voted during priority. So, like John said to Jim, we're moving forward as of right now with Amendment 18 for fleet diversity and accumulation limits.
We've been struggling with this for a long time now. And while I'm glad to know that this will go back to the Groundfish Committee, I don't have an expectation that it will be dealt with any differently than it has over the last many months, which hasn't resulted in a whole lot. And that's why I put this up here, to try to broaden the scope of input, because it's not working through the Groundfish Committee. The staff has done all they can to bring forth the range of issues that need to be addressed, and the committee has not been able to wrestle with it. This, something different needs to be done.
That was going to be my point as well, that you pointed out, John, this is a different kind of discussion, and I think it's going to take a different process than
Rick Cunningham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to suggest what I hope will be taken as a friendly amendment, and to establish an ad hoc groundfish accumulation limit committee made up of the Groundfish Committee, the PDT, Groundfish PDT, the Groundfish AP, and conduct a facilitated meeting on accumulation limits. It was just suggested to me, another friendly, that we also get somebody from the SSC on there as well. I'm offering it up as a friendly. I guess that's up to the maker and seconder.
What do the maker and seconder think?
As long as it's clear that the purpose is that this group will provide a suite of options to give back to the council for consideration. And it's not that everybody in this larger ad hoc group endorses one or all of the options, but their job is to come up with a range of options so we can move this thing forward. Is that the intent? Okay.
Okay, we have a perfected motion. Dr. Pierce and Dave Gaethel.
Just a question on the perfected motion. Is the intent of the perfection for the executive committee to select individuals from those different groups, or will everyone associated with those elements of the council be part of it? So, in other words, it will be about 50 people?
The only selection would be a couple of members of the SSC, and perhaps that could be done by the executive committee. The rest would be the entire groups.
Dave Gettle?
Yeah, as the seconder, I think it would. I think it should say of all members from the Groundfish Committee, Groundfish PDT, the Groundfish Advisory Panel, and select members. Okay, that'll work. I can support that as the seconder, as long as it's clear that it's all members of all those other groups except the SSC.
Doug Grapp?
Yeah, I just wanted to say I support this motion.
Anyone else on the council? Go to the audience. Maggie?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maggie Raymond, Associated Fisheries of Maine. It's not clear to me that this is the right way to go. I think we have a process where committee comes forward with the committee and the advisory panel come forward with recommendations to the council. This doesn't sound a whole lot different from that, except that we have a facilitator, which I'm not sure that that ever works out very well. I think that one of the reasons why the committee has not been able to come forward with a list of recommendations is because the council has not given them clear direction, and a clear problem statement has not been made. How can the committee develop solutions to a problem when the problem has not been defined? But having said that, it's clear to me that this motion is likely to pass. I would recommend that you probably need to add your recreational advisory panel, since there are people who have openly said that they want to take the recreational golf and cod allocation away from them and reallocate it to the commercial fleet. So I would expect that they would probably have a position on that issue. Thank you.
Buster.
Henry McCarthy, fisherman, ex-fisherman, Scituate Harbor. I guess I'd like to comment on the fact that there's no representation from the sectors. I would hope that there would be. You could put one individual from each sector on that panel, so sectors like mine, which I guess that we are now calling the have-nots or the losers. The whiners, I read in the newspaper as well, I was referred to as, which I found quite humorous after having to leave my boat for the first time in 15 years in a boatyard to get spray-painted by an environmental group. I would hope that you would put some representation from the fishermen that actually go fishing, you know, on that panel, so we could get some actual representation. So I wouldn't have to sit at the dock and with no allocation because I had 7 months of rolling closures and I was a hook fisherman in the Gulf of Maine, which apparently they give out awards for unless you're in the Gulf of Maine. I guess that's all I have to say. You guys ought to be ashamed of yourself, by the way. I don't know how you sleep.
Bonnie?
Bonnie Brady, Long Island Commercial Fishing Association. I'm so glad I stayed until after 4. On that list, New York, the forgotten state, the state that has no representation on your council, be great. I even believe there are a couple of ground fishermen from New Jersey. If in the stadium of folks that you're going to have at this meeting, you could also include, because there is no one from New York on the Groundfish Advisory Committee. There is no one from New York on the Groundfish Committee or the PDT or any of those. If some New York folks could be on there, that would be great. Thank you.
Steve.
Steve Welch. I was just wondering where, I mean, we have sectors now, and let's make them work. I don't think it's going to work if you don't have people from the smaller ports in there that aren't represented, which Buster had pointed out. So I don't know how you're going to, you should add more people to this, or somehow allow us to have an input in the process. Thank you.
Okay, back to the council. We've heard some comments about changing the membership of this ad hoc committee. Dave Gathel.
Yeah, I just kind of a question for the council in general. I mean, my understanding of a facilitated meeting is that that all ideas go forward, that it's not, I mean, the problem with a voting body is that only the voting The idea is that, one, the vote go forward. And so I want to make sure that that's what everybody's understanding is here, that the, you know, all these issues related to the small boats that everybody's just enunciated, or the issues related to New York, that all those issues will be on the table and will be worked at through this facilitation. Because if that's not the council's understanding, then we got more work to do.
Mary Beth?
Well, I guess I understand why Dave may have made those comments. I'm a little concerned by that. At the same time, I mean, even if you had a meeting summary that went through what all those ideas are, the council cannot develop all these ideas. We're going to have a culling process at some point. And one of the biggest problems we have with Amendment 5 to Herring is that we were inclusive of all these ideas. And it's taken us forever to get anywhere because we had too many ideas. So at some point, we have to make decisions. And whether or not this meeting provides a summary of everybody's ideas at the table, I don't have a problem with that. But wouldn't want people to think we're going to move them all forward.
Jim?
Yeah, I think that some of those ideas will probably need a referendum, or may need a decision on whether they would or not would need a referendum. So I would hope that as part of the Ground Fish Committee, we'll have our normal standing committee, which includes Gene, so that we can answer those questions as ideas are being developed. Just so this idea, yes, we can do it, but it's going to encompass this. We can do this, and it's going to take this because of legal bounds that we're under.
Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not 100% sure which way this vote's going to go, but I want to make sure, because I'm hearing different things around the table and from the audience. As I'm reading this, I'm reading accumulation, and I'm pretty sure that that's the intent of everybody here. But I'm hearing other people say that this is going to get into allocation, and that's two totally different motions, two totally different topics, agendas, amendments. I just want to make sure everybody's clear on that before we go forward.
Anyone else on the council? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Opposed? Abstentions? One abstention. Motion carries 14-0. One abstention.
Now the main motion is
same question as amended. Same motion as amended. Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Opposed? Abstentions, one abstention, 14-0-1. David?
A question of this vote sets up this committee, and then if we scroll back a ways, we have the motion that continued that requires the Groundfish Committee to continue to work on consolidation limits. I see those as mutually exclusive, so that the Groundfish Committee will continue to work on this subject to develop the issue. I just want to make sure that that's what the chair sees as well.
I would say that my feeling was that this was step one of that continuing process, getting together the facilitated meeting.
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One final item under the Southern New England Cod issue. The committee has had at two different meetings had discussions concerning an issue that came to us. There was concern about the unusually high catch rates of cod in the southern New England area. We listened to discussions of people coming from that who had fished in that area and gave us some information on it. The committee discussed it and decided to make a recommendation to the council. The motion is, on behalf of the committee, recommend that the council include an option in Framework 47 to create a cod bag limit on all recreational vessels, including party charter vessels, for Georges Bank, Southern New England, Mid-Atlantic, Atlantic cod. Passed at the committee 11-0.
Committee motion, discussion? Terry.
A question for Tom. And my question, Tom, is with the additional workload we just voted upon, plus the earlier issue that we've of the mortality closures in the habitat areas, is it realistic to think that we can include this in Framework 47, or should we consider it as a priority issue for the fall?
Well, I'm a little confused the way you asked the question, because I thought the earlier motion that on the habitat areas, it was clear that the groundfish PDT really wouldn't be working on that until later. But, I mean, this was not planned for. This was not one of the priorities for this fishing year. It's certainly not the size of an issue of the mortality closure issue, but this is going to cause us some problems, I think.
It's an issue I know of huge importance to the Southern New England state, so I just want to give it due justice.
Frank.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we should put it in the priority discussion. I've been in talk with the state of New York, my own state. The regional administrator made a comment at the Mid-Atlantic Council meeting 2 weeks ago that hopefully the states could deal with this issue, and we could have something in place. The states could actually do something quite a bit quicker than the council. So I would recommend that we put it in the priorities, and if we still need to do something, we may have an answer from the states before our November meeting.
Anyone else on the council? Rip.
I'm just asking, Frank, is that a motion on your part to move this to?
Yeah, I would substitute that we move this to the priority discussion at the November meeting.
Is that a second, Rodney? Seconded by Rodney. Discussion on the motion to substitute. David Gaither.
Apparently, Frank knows something the rest of us don't know. I'm gathering from what you said that the states are planning on dealing with this somehow, some interstate bag limit, for example, or, you know, could you just kind of tell us why we should put this off until November?
There's not an agreement yet with the states, but talking with the state directors, I know New York, I don't want to say too much out front, but New York was more or less willing to go along and do something if the other states would follow suit. So it's just going to take the states to get together and, you know, see if there's a problem to do something with it. If we add this in, the council can't make it for next season that we're talking about, the winter season. So it makes sense to try and let the states deal with it, and hopefully it can move a lot quicker than the council can. And at that time, if we still have a problem, the council could put it in some place, but I'm fairly confident that the states will deal with it.
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, I haven't heard any discussion between the states regarding our doing this. It's not to say we couldn't do this. Actually, maybe it'll prompt some discussion with ASMFC regarding the need for us to establish a groundfish management board. And we can pursue all sorts of things, such as state allocations of groundfish. Wouldn't that mess up sector management? Certainly, it's an issue that's important to me. I've noted why at previous meetings, previous groundfish committee meetings, and I'm not going to elaborate now, except to say that I suspect there will be some discussion now between the states that where these fish would be landed, and you know, we'll see where that takes us. But, you know, no promises. But then again, if there is support for this sort of a strategy from the party and charter boat fleets in the different states, perhaps the states could work it out and come up with a strategy that would cause the council not to take up time on this issue.
Yeah, Rhode Island has a council meeting Monday night. I intend to bring it up at the Rhode Island meeting. Mark knows that. And also, something I brought up at the last meeting, I brought up to our state. I mean, I have fought it for years, but it's on the agenda tomorrow night for a filet law in Rhode Island. By my suggestion.
Mark Alexander.
Connecticut already has possession limits, and we would certainly be amenable to working with other states to make them uniform. So.
Any further discussion from the council? Anyone in the audience on this issue? Back to the council. Ready for the question on the motion to substitute? All those in favor, raise your hand. Thirteen. Opposed? Abstentions. Two abstentions. Motion to substitute carries 13-02. Same question, new vote. All those in favor, raise your hand. Thirteen. No votes. Abstentions. Two. Motion carries 13-0. Two abstentions. Rip.
Finished.
Doug Grout.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Earlier in this meeting, I brought up an issue concerning the common pool, where there was a desire to potentially provide advice to the regional administrator as to whether she should prefer put in differential days at sea, higher differential days at sea, and thus provide for higher trip limits to provide the opportunity for common pool vessels to be more efficient with their catch. And I know it's a late hour right now, and so maybe this is not something that should be discussed at the full committee, but I was wondering if we could ask that the Groundfish Committee at their next meeting spend 10 minutes seeing if this is something that we'd be willing to make a recommendation to provide some guidance to the regional administrator on. It seemed to make a lot of sense because the whole structure of sectors is to try and have higher trip limits so that you can be more efficient with your catch. And I would at least like to have some kind of an open discussion about this to see if the council or at least the Groundfish Committee thinks this makes any sense.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It was discussed at our a recent Groundfish Committee. I'm just reading through the minutes on that. The final I think we may have sent a Tom, did we send a staff letter on that?
Sort of. At the Groundfish Committee meeting, one or two members of the public came up and made this comment. And during the comment period on whatever framework just got approved, we sent a letter reporting 45. That comment. The committee didn't really endorse it. They just said this was told to us at the Groundfish Committee, and we suggest you consider it.
Well, as I said, even though I realize this was brought up by a member from or a person from New Hampshire, it certainly makes a lot of sense to me to provide that kind of guidance to the regional administrator, and I was hoping to hear how other people on the committee or the groundfish felt about this, or were they just neutral? It certainly makes a lot of sense and follows some of the guidance that, or the guidelines that we have with sectors, the reasons we have sectors, to make them more efficient. So if I was going to make, do we need a motion for this, or does the committee not want to take this up? Or I would like to remand this question back to the committee to come up with a recommendation one way or the other, either that we provide guidance that differential days at sea is the preferred way, or that narrow trip limits and higher lower differential days at sea.
I'm not sure that I disagree with you. I would sort of turn to the regional administrator and see if there's any comment on the recommendation that was made, or and to sort of.
But I think the I think if the council does have a preference, then it's worth having the discussion. I think you need to have the discussion and make some sort of recommendation. I appreciate getting the letter that said this was raised, but I don't quite know what to do with those kinds of things because it doesn't tell me what the council thinks about it. So I do think that a committee discussion is worthwhile.
Jim?
Yeah, I have no problem with the committee discussing this. But I'm trying to think back 4.5, maybe 5 years ago now, that when we built Amendment 16 up, we had this discussion, and there was rationale of why we picked the kind of like the blueprint of how things would work if the quotas got tight and what the adjustments would be. So all I'm suggesting is that when we do have this discussion, we ask staff to, if my memory is correct, bring that back out so we can start with that as a blueprint.
I see Tom Neesh nodding his head, so he understands what you're saying. No, but he's probably the most important at this point. David?
I agree with you on that. He's definitely the most important. But, the discussion that happened, it put us in a bit of a tight spot. It was the day before the final comments were due. Tom was kind enough to craft a letter on his own time that night. The committee can't send a letter on behalf of the council. There wasn't time to get the council to approve it before the final comments were due. We wrote Tom wrote the strongest letter he could given the constraints that we operate under. I think there was a pretty clear discussion from my memory at the committee meeting that we would hope that the regional administrator could explore, coming up with a mix of differential counting and trip limits that would allow people to catch enough fish to cover the cost of going fishing, and that the trip limits that were proposed at the time for framework for implementation this year were so low that given the cost of fuel, it was uneconomical for common pool vessels to leave the dock, at least in certain areas. So that's my recollection of the discussion. And the constraints that revolved around the committee sending a letter without the full council meeting to approve it.
So it sounds like the committee will take the issue up again and collective memory will be refreshed by past discussions, and hopefully there'll be a new discussion at the committee and it'll come back here. Thank you, Doug. Anything further? We're all set on groundfish. Any other business? Jackie?
Thank you. Jackie O'Dell, Northeast Seafood Coalition. I wasn't here on Tuesday, but it was my understanding that the council had discussed, I believe based upon a request that Maggie made, to discuss the dockside monitoring provisions in Framework 45. Many of us, a lot of our organizations, wrote in comments in regards to the new administrative provision that was included in Framework 45 to have the dockside monitors go on to the vessels and inspect the fish holds, something that we strongly oppose for a multitude of reasons, which I'd be happy to discuss, or you could talk about it among yourselves. I know there are members of the council that are also concerned about the liability associated with that provision, and we're hoping that the council would have a dialogue about that and possibly send a letter to the agency asking them to have that be modified for Framework 45.
You know, you're right. We did talk about that on Tuesday, and I expected if somebody wanted to make a motion, they would have made it under groundfish. Jim?
Are we done with groundfish? Or? I'm sorry.
We'll be done for 5 minutes, yeah.
Okay.
But you can bring it up now if you want under other business.
In spite of what has been written by a council member in an email, I've always been opposed to having dockside monitors go on board vessels to inspect the fish holes. I think this is dangerous, unnecessary, and completely changes the role of the dockside monitor. This should be reversed right away, and it will not help enforcement, in my opinion. If somebody wants to take out fish that they don't want monitored, they would simply do it before they got to the monitor. That's just what they would do. And having the dockside monitor go down on the fish hole after the fact makes no sense to me. I don't understand it, because law enforcement can easily just ride up and down the docks, and if somebody's unloading fish and there's no monitor there and they were required to have a monitor, it's a violation. So I would request, I'll request that the council write a letter and express our concerns to the requirement to have dockside monitors go down in the fish holes.
Is there a second? Everybody? Let's see. Jim Fair, second. Discussion? Dave Preble.
Yeah, I'm not going to belabor the point. I agree with Jim completely. I agree with what Jackie said. There's no reason whatever for dockside monitors to get down in the holes. The job is to count fish as they come off the boat. And as Jim pointed out, as enforcement agents, they would be ineffective. They're not trained for it. It's unconscionable to allow them to get on the boats and start rooting around. So I support this completely.
Pat Kirkle.
Well, that's correct. They're not enforcement agents, but their job is to count the fish that the boat caught, not the fish that the boat offloaded. And if they're not counting the fish that the boat caught, then, frankly, I don't see why we're spending all this money on it. I don't see why the government is spending all this money on it right now and why the industry at some point would be expected to pick up the cost. What's the point of the program if they don't count the fish? I don't really understand the liability and the insurance issue. You've got observers going on the boat now. You've got coasties going on the boat. You've got enforcement agents going on the boat. You've got state enforcement people going on the boat. You've got the people offloading the boat going on the boat. It just doesn't make any sense that we would ask them to do something and not give them the tools or not require them to actually do it completely. I don't see the point of spending the money on it if we're not getting anything out of it.
Rod.
Yeah, it's very different having a lumper on a boat, having a crew member on a boat. They're on the boat before you start unloading. Once you start unloading, the docks become slimy. There's only about that much dock in New Bedford to walk on to get on the boat. I go on them every day. I'm almost falling in the water every day. You got to be very careful. I showed John a picture. I've got a picture if you want to see it. That's the problem right there is getting, and when the tide is low, that it's worse getting on the boat. It's very different with the lumpers because most of the time the lumpers unload and then they go to another dock to get off the boat. That's one of the issues.
Dave Gaethel.
Yeah. Pat and I agree on one thing, that what's the sense of the dockside monitors, finally. That's what I've said from day one. The joint enforcement people are the people to be doing this. They can enforce the law. I'm going to stand up. Take a look at me. Remember me? Remember what I looked like in September? I'm the guy who fell 20 feet off the dock unloading a boat. All right? You're going to have a dockside monitor in here that's going to look just like that at some point in time. The only difference is he's going to get $1 million or $2 million or $10 million for it. He's not going to be like me. So when somebody says that it's different for the observers of the Coast Guard, yeah, it is. I picked my observer up at a dock. I unloaded a ladder. The dockside monitor, in order to get on my boat, he's going to have to crawl down an ice-encrusted ladder. I don't go up that ladder. They want my copy of my logbook, I stuff it in a box and send it up. The man who is a dockside monitor at my dock is somewhere between 60 and 70 years old. He's fit to walk in and out on a level surface and watch fish get weighted inside a heated building. He's not fit, and has already told me, he will not crawl down that ladder, try and get into a fish hold, which may be deeper than the distance I fell. You take some of these boats that are 80 or 90 feet, they got fish holds that are over 20 feet deep. The only difference is you're not going to land on a wooden float like I did and maybe survive, albeit rather smashed up. You're going to land on either cement or steel because that's what's at the bottom of a fish hold ladder on a steel boat. And when you do, you're going to be cutting off a corpse, not a guy who's totally smashed up like I am. So, you know, as I said back in November, I don't think the dockside monitoring program has any use whatsoever. I was willing to try it for a year to satisfy people, but I've seen it in action. I still think it has no use. The proper way to find out if people are smuggling in fish is through the joint enforcement agreements and uniform NOAA agents. These people who basically walk around with a clipboard and watch somebody weigh fish are not capable of doing it. So, you know, I think this is a fundamental issue, and, you know, I still go back to what I said in November. I don't think this program has any use, utility. I think it's a very expensive feel-good measure. And so I'd certainly support the motion, but I think we should go a lot further and just eliminate the program altogether. Thank you.
Anybody want to speak against the motion? Against the motion from the council? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Twelve. Opposed? Abstentions? Two abstentions. Motion carries 12-02. Anything further? Okay. We'll see you in June.